Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Kono Kamada. Welcome to Satsang. I'm joined tonight, as always, by PLAN and our core council members, Linda and Timothy. And we're going to go ahead and get right into it. Go ahead and take a deep breath, call yourselves forward, and we'll clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And now I call forth a Christed shaft of light, one for each one of us. And I ask that they surround us and go to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you, to humanity. PLAN and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Good. Come on back to me. We'll get started. If you're feeling lots of energetics lately, you are not alone. There is an awful lot going on planetarily, astrologically. There have been a lot of alignments, and we have a lot of movement going on currently within the Earth's grid system. So the system that you know of, concerning ley lines and all that. There's just a lot of change taking place right now. So we're all going to feel the impact of that. Some of us are feeling it very strongly within our personal energy fields, and we're certainly witnessing it in what's going on with the collective. On one, just a minor kind of note, just where you'll see it happening in the physical world is the changes taking place in Yellowstone right now. If any of you have kind of paid attention to Yellowstone right now, you know, it's a super volcano, and that caldera that's like 20 miles wide and sitting like 6 miles deep in the earth is so hot that it's literally melting the main roadway in Yellowstone. It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. So when we see that, we know that this is, you know, this is not a fluky thing, that this is part of all the changes that we are experiencing. Certainly, each one of you is representative of the change, and we're also seeing it on a collective level through humanity, and then even greater within the Earth herself. So Tara, as I would prefer to call her, you know, has some twisting and shaking and lots of movement to be made, just as all of us have to move through our own work. So just recognize right now that there will be an amplification of these energies, and you will be experiencing them in your world. We're very, very much right now at a time when those things that have been thus far left incomplete concerning our identification in the world, our beliefs that are still in place, that are being held in place unconsciously, any of those things are coming forward at this time for completion very strongly. So this is definitely a time of huge shifting. And, you know, I would just say again that this is the time to get back to your core as frequently as you can. Go into meditation, you know, jump into the void as often as you possibly can. Reconnect with that Christed heart space so that you can move consciously through all the challenges that are coming and will be coming. No one will be exempt from them. So just know that, you know, you're in a good place, and the fact that they're coming means it's good. It's good. It's good timing. It all needs to come. So let's let it come, and let's do the work needed to do to complete what has just been left hanging, you know, through lifetimes. And now we're having an opportunity to finally clear it. So do the three of you have any questions about that for me at all? Pelia, no? 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 Nothing? I guess
he wants to have a question.
I guess my students, you know, I guess they've done enough of this that it's no big deal for them. And I wish that I could be inside of all of your heads to hear the questions that are coming. A lot of people have a faulty assumption in place that, you know, because of the light work that's being done on the planet, it means that we should be able to bypass every change that could happen, you know, in and on and around the Earth. And that just isn't the case. You know, it's kind of like, think of it this way, you know, for all of you, you've carried a karmic load into this lifetime that isn't, you know, relegated to one lifetime. It's multiple lifetimes worth of karma that you've carried in. And most likely with the knowing that this lifetime would be the one where you would clear all of it. And if that was the case for you, if you're one of those people that was meant to, you know, walk off the life-death cycle in this lifetime, then that's a lot to clear in one short little span of time. And you will notice, and you have noticed, that there have been tragedies and difficult things to move through. Many, many, many people who, you know, came into this particular incarnation knowing that this would be the last one, chose very difficult life circumstances to be born into. And that was why it was a way to work through karma very quickly. So they were born into very abusive situations, especially abuse. That's just a ton of what I see in my work. And they've just had, it's been a difficult road. Well, oftentimes when I see people who come to me and then that's the story, and the story is one of, you know, a very difficult time, especially during childhood, I know that that's why. It's just your opportunity to just move through it as quickly as you can, assuming that you're willing to do the work needed to get through it. So the planet, you know, she isn't any different. And while she never fell in the capacity that humanity did, because Tara herself would not have identified with the concept of I. We are experiencing a fallen Earth because that's where our consciousness is at on its own. So it will experience the level of consciousness it sits at, right? And so in our reality that we're walking right now from that fallen place, we are experiencing a fallen Earth. Well, that fallen Earth is polarized, right? So we're going to experience all the movement that we experience ourselves when we do our work. And when you go in and do very deep spiritual work, you will notice that there are very heavy, deep, painful emotions that come up to be cleared. And sometimes they come out in waves of tears and grief, and sometimes it comes out through rage and anger. Sometimes it's laughter, you know, but it all has to come up to clear itself. And the version of the Earth that we're experiencing right now will be doing the same thing. So while it is true that as we collectively raise our vibration and consciousness expands more and more, while it is true that that will certainly do a lot to kind of negate the amount of change that the Earth needs to go through, and we certainly have, help from other beings who are here to help us in other, from other planes of consciousness. And that is absolutely taking place as well. Here in the physical form, we won't be exempt from some of the Earth changes that do need to happen. Now, don't get me wrong. This isn't meant to be some kind of a thing where I get y'all scared that, the super volcano in Yellowstone's going to go blow. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that it's not unusual to see these things happen. They are just indicators of what is happening on a collective level. And again, it's here for our completion. So use it as nothing to fear, just as something to show you even further that, if you have been doing your spiritual work, keep pushing, push harder. If you haven't committed yet to truly doing your work, it's time to commit. If you are just now moving into a space where you're starting to explore what's out there as far as coming into deeper spiritual understandings, take a good look at where you want to go and how quickly you want to go, and be very discerning as far as the path that you choose to take. Because some, all paths kind of end up in the same spot, but some paths are very direct and other paths are very windy and with lots of cul-de-sacs, right? So just be discerning in your work. Recognize that you do have intuition and it's there for a reason. So if you're getting an intuitive sense of moving in a certain direction or doing something, follow that. Pay attention to it because it's there as a gift to you, from you. Okay, so that being said, where do we want to start tonight, Pielian?
We can go over what I had for... from last week, something that you said to carry over to this week. So we have, thought only exists in lower mind. If there's no thought, there's no lower mind. So,
yes,
for me, that was very, very profound. And I feel like it might possibly need more explanation because it's kind of a mind blower. For me, looking at it is kind of like when we were having, that wasn't on BBS, that was actually just regular satsang. But when we were talking about when, as soon as one awakens, we all awaken. I realized when, because we were going over that for a while, and I realized, oh, well, if you're awakened and that's all there is, of course everyone's all awakened.
Right.
So I see it the same way with the whole, if there's no thought, there's no lower mind. So it makes sense.
So I don't need to say anything then?
Well, I'm wondering, because that's, I don't know if everyone's going to understand that.
Yeah, well, and certainly you can't understand it.
Yeah.
You can only experience it because it is the lower mind itself that is the creator of the thought, right? And so only within the construct of lower mind can you even think about the concept. So how can the one that seems to think about the concept be the one to unravel the concept? It's not going to happen, right? Yeah, they'll play around with it for a long time. Have a lot of fun doing it. But it's not something you can think your way toward. Just understand that while the lower mind is in place and that's what everybody is experiencing here, there is higher mind. And the problem that people run into is because of polarization and because of the way the lower mind perceives its reality, it can only see that as kind of two separate things. Like once one is gone, the other one's there, but they can't be simultaneous. And that's absolutely incorrect. Mind itself runs the gamut. It's a matter of degrees. So within lower mind itself, thought is present and all of this is going on. Identification is present. The identification is there because the belief is there that separation is real. Well, in the space of higher mind, thought doesn't need to be there because the one that is that movement of the divine doesn't need to think it. It is it. So there's no thought there because there's no belief in separation either. The one that is it, right? There's no, oh, I have a question. Tim, come on over.
So, this is a good question I have. So if lower mind has thought, then what is the equivalent thing for higher mind? Like, does it not have like a thought to do something, or is it just like a energy impulse, just intuition?
You know what it is.
Oh. So it's intuition.
Right. So in the space of, and you all have this experience, and this is the beauty. This is actually where I was going with it. So thank you for the question. Again, the lower mind says, well, it has to be one or the other. And what it can't see is that both can be existing simultaneously and you just don't recognize it. So all of you have the experience, right, of feeling this non-thought impulse that something needs to happen, whether it's make a phone call, go, you know, get in the car and go to the grocery store, like whatever it is, it's not a thought, it's an impulse. Yeah. And the impulse itself is outside of thought process. It's coming from a completely different place than, you know, the matrix or the program, right? It comes from higher mind. It is the divine speaking, you know, without words. And it comes through as this kind of understanding or knowing that you just, oh, it's time to do that, right? But what happens when that comes for most people is immediately it's recognized, and then the lower mind takes it and has to individualize it and make it mine, and now I have to attach something to it. So if the impulse came to pick up the phone and call an old friend, let's say, as soon as it's witnessed, instead of just moving with it without questioning, without anything, just moving with it, right, and witnessing the movement of it, what happens is the lower mind engages and says, oh, why, you know, I wonder why that person just popped into my head. And then the lower mind says, oh, gosh, you know, the last time I talked to that person, we had an argument, and, you know, it probably wouldn't be too good if I called her right now. She probably doesn't want to hear from me anyway. See, so now we have a story. Now we have this whole story that's been engaged in and identified with, and it actually puts the brakes on the impulse that was just there to be witnessed and then allowed to flow, right? So both were present right in the space of each other, weren't they? You know, You've got one that's very present, and it's there all the time, and you rarely recognize it because the identification is so strong that what you really recognize isn't the impulse. You recognize the story that comes on the heels of the impulse, but the impulse is there. So when I say to you, you know, remember, we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it, because the Christ hasn't gone anywhere. The Christ is here. That's the perfect example of how it is here, and you don't recognize it. Because when the impulse comes, if you really look at it, and each one of you, I'm sure, can pull up an image of when that has happened to you recently. So when that comes for anyone, it comes without a story, doesn't it? I mean, there's no story. It's just what it is. Call Betty, right? That's it. There's no story there. And so who would it be then that would allow it to continue without a story and actually go grab a phone, make a phone call? Who is that? See, can that not be the Christ right there? Just moving with that divine impulse, with no question, with no story, with no opinion, with no attachment. But it's not the Christ in the space of, we had a fight, I'm hesitant to call her, I'm afraid she's going to yell at me, it won't be pleasant, right? That's a whole other thing. And this is an understanding that isn't, you know, I'll speak it to you and y'all are going to forget about it within a week, until you experience it that way. Because at some point you'll have the experience where what is witnessed is this, you know, amazing movement, this never-ending movement of energy that flows here through these impressions. And then that body can take the impression and it can just move it, right? And they always say, you know, God needs a body, right? Well, so here, that's the truth. And that's what this can be. This can be the Christ in form moving the will of God. Because there is a plan there. There's a reason. Everything, there's nothing that's happening here that is, you know, accidental or just happenstance. That doesn't exist. There's nothing that's going on that's outside of the will of God, right? Even the identification in that sense, because what's happening within the program of identification itself is all there for the express purpose of giving you the key to wake yourself up so that God can wake up and recognize itself as God again. There's nothing out there working against that. It's all working for that. See? All of it. When I say the universe is benevolent, boy, do I mean it. Because that's all there is. Every single thing happening, regardless of what it looks like, and regardless of the stories that we want to attach to it, because we're polarized here and we want to say, well, that was a bad thing. It just doesn't exist. Because there's nothing happening here that isn't in everyone's highest good in any given moment. It's just that we attach our concept of what our highest good should be to whatever it is that's happening, right? So we take that belief and we just overlay it on top of what truly is. And then we lose it. We can't see it. You can't see the forest for the trees, right? And that's exactly what's going on here. The Christ could stand in the space and watch everything happening and have perfect understanding of why it was all happening the way it was happening, even if it looked horrendous. And you have the perfect example of that with Yeshua on the cross. Walks to his own physical death, right? And embraced it. Why? It was in everyone's highest good. It was very clear. Very clear. Not clear to everybody around him, though, was it? As everybody sat around watching him suffering as they perceived it. right? Because it would have been their own perceptions. They were not enlightened beings that were watching him die. So as they watched the physical form going through, it was going through, their perception was that he was suffering, right? Their perception was, what a sad thing. He's leaving us. You know, this shouldn't have happened. Like, all of this stuff was running for them. The grief, right? Didn't exist for him. Because he could see with a floodlight as opposed to the disciples who could only see with a spotlight. And so this is the trick, right? That here in this paradigm, the experience is it has to be, everything has to be one or the other. It's all, you know, it's good or bad. It's never like both simultaneously, but it is. Everything is. Everything is the same thing, just different degrees of the same thing. That's my very favorite message from Vivekananda, is that right there. I remember the first time I read that in one of his talks that he gave in the early 1900s, and it blew me away because it brought such clarity to that whole thing, because I could look at it from the space of, that is what's going on here with the lower mind. We have this concept that the lower mind is something bad that needs to be gotten rid of, right? But what we can't see is the only thing that's happening here is consciousness is floating around on this sliding scale way down on one end, right? That's all that's going on. But it pops up too. It slides back and forth and back and forth, different degrees of the same thing. Mind as God itself. Whether it be higher or lower, is one not God? Different degrees of the same thing. So we can see the lower mind as the exact opposite of God. We could see lower mind as the devil itself. And I've often said, and if you know me, you've heard it, you know, if there is a devil, it is the mind. Because it's the only thing that experiences the exact opposite of what it is. And wasn't that the point of the story of the devil to begin with, right? But you have a false sense of what that is, you know? It's still here trying to show you the same thing. The devil mind that you're all, you know, identified with is trying to show you God all the time. You understand? I mean, that this is very deep, very, very deep. As far as even intellectualizing it, it's very deep. And it can be hard to really grasp. It's different when you've had the experience of it, because then you just get it on a very deep level. But to talk about it can be tricky. Okay. So I think that was all about what you just said. I think about lower mind and thought not existing in the space of lower mind. And that's correct, right? Because you're looking at the polar opposite of non-mind, it meaning non-thought. It's not necessary, right? So in the illumined worlds, people aren't going around thinking about how to solve their problems and thinking, and, you know, like, the individuation is there. You are an individuated being, but you're also God, as all are. So, you know, I'm you and I'm you and I'm you, and we can all see into each other that way. So what use is there for words? If you can look at me and send an impression, and that impression contains within it an entire, you know, what I guess in like Jungian terms would be considered like a gestalt of information comes in without words. It's like a full download of everything involved in the concept itself is all in one little package, right? And that's how things function. Outside of here, it's here we have some kind of a belief that we have to think things through, that we have to work it out, start here, end there, right? We have no concept here that it can all come as one chunk in its entirety without anybody having to be there to be the doer to figure it out. So that helps to hold, because we believe that, that helps to hold it in place here. And then we look at, you know, inventors who have moved into the space of such what they would, you know, call inspiration, where the thought just comes of what the invention's going to be, right? And then we think about them as being some kind of unique, wow, that was amazing. I wonder how that happened. How do you do that, right? And what we can't see is, well, he's every one of you. He's just being what he is. He's being what we all are, which is tapped into the unified field. You are that. But the belief stands there collectively that we're separate. And because we're separate, all the other stuff comes into being with it. You know, the belief that, well, we're born and we have to learn to talk. We have to learn what things mean, right? It's hot and it's cold, right? Yeah, hot is bad. Unless it's a really cold day, then hot is good. And oh my gosh, it gets confusing, right? Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that there are people, and all of you are included in that. You have your moments of Christhood all the time. And you don't recognize it. Because when you're it, you're it. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you are something, you don't recognize yourself because you are it. The Christ doesn't look at itself and go, hey, look at me, I'm the Christ. Right? Because Christ is that. Why are we experiencing individuation? Well, from a very core place, because the Creator, being all that is, didn't necessarily know what it was. So to create pieces of itself within itself, now it can look at something and go, oh, okay, I am that. Look at that. Oh, I'm that too. Ooh, that too, right? It gave it a way to experience itself. If you are just what you are and there's nothing outside of it, how do you know what you are? If there's nothing juxtaposing you, you don't know what you are. Linda looks like she's going to explode. Okay. When the Christ is present, the Christ is present. That's why you miss it, because you're in it. You are it. You observe the identified self very easily, especially when you do the work that I do, and you learn to, right? The mind learns to observe objectively. But even the observer is observed. Go ahead.
Something you said about when you're it, like you're in it. So I was just thinking, so if you're it fully, you wouldn't even know, or would you even know that you exist anymore? Would you even drop the whole concept of me? Because if you're in it, you just wouldn't even
know. This is an excellent question, and it's interesting the way you worded it. So you said, would you even know that you exist anymore? And then coming off of that, you said, because there wouldn't be any sense of me, right? Now you put those two in the same space together, and they actually aren't. There is no sense of me there. There isn't. Other than from a fundamental, because you are awareness itself, but you are awareness that is viewing through a particular place. So within that space, there is the I am, right? Because that doesn't get lost. You are individuated. So you experience that. But you don't experience it as me. Because all of it is the I am. All of it. Right? You see the connection everywhere. You can't not. because that is the experience. However, the question about existence, you are existence itself. Pure awareness. Pure life. That is what you are. And in the space of the Christ, that is the experience. You are that. But you aren't it to the point where you're looking at it from the place where you're saying, I'm this. See what I'm saying? Because you are it. You embody it. It's not a concept. It's what you are. That's what I always say about love. People get very confused about love because human love is not the same as divine love. They're very different things, right? Human love is predicated on behavior. It's conditional. Human love is a false sense of what love actually is, because that level of love came out of pain. However, divine love, Christed love, is a very different thing. But at that point, you don't feel like you're in love. You are love. It transcends the word itself. And it transcends any concept we have concerning what love is. Right? That's why here in the world, it can be very confusing, especially when you have the grace to be in the space of a master, because all the time masters will do things to be like, well, that doesn't look like love. Love is supposed to be the, oh, what does the Bible say? Love is patient. Love is kind. Love, right? Right? Love doesn't yell. And then they're all confused about the story in the Bible with Jesus and the money changers. It doesn't make any sense. See, he was human. And that's what everyone wants to come back to. The human side of Jesus, right? Jesus got ticked off. That's not what was happening there, right? Jesus was taking right action. He was in the highest good of all concerned. He wasn't attached to it. He didn't look at the money changers and hate them and judge them. He saw their divinity, but he had to point something out to them that they were missing, that they weren't seeing. It was his job to do that. He was the only one who could see it clearly, right? And who could see it from a non-attached, unidentified place. It's very simple, actually. But the identified human mind can't wrap itself around that. It just can't see it. And it will always use it as that thing to hold against the person, right? That's exactly what it'll do. So in one sense, you'll have this concept of, oh, this person is a master, right? And then you're actually in the space of the person for a while, because maybe the first few times you're around them, they really kind of live up to the ideal you have of what a master is and should be. Yeah. Concepts. They're all just concepts. Now, remember, the master exists outside of the concepts. I don't have any attachment to a concept. I'm like, what? I'm supposed to, you know, wear white and throw a blanket over my lap when I meditate, and I'm supposed to wear a bindi. You know, like, what is that? They don't care. It doesn't mean anything to them. The only thing that they care about is showing you where you're attached, right? What does that look like? Well, sometimes it looks like a master that gets angry with you. Sometimes it looks like a master who has no compassion for you whatsoever. They don't understand my suffering. You know, if he was really a master, he'd be more sympathetic. Right? And this is exactly how you end up with people, you know, who are greatly illumined teachers who end up with these, you know, ridiculous things that are said about them, about how horrendous they are as people and how horrible, and they get, you know, they get slammed because the human mind, the identified mind, can't see what's really going on. The master sees it perfectly well. But they're not here to sit there and explain to you, look, this is why I did what I did, right? Because that's not going to do what needs to happen. They need to put it in your face to such a point that you have to deal with it. And then where do you deal with it from? If they have to explain it to you, you're not going to learn anything, right? You'll get a mental understanding. But you're not going to move into a deeper experience that will then lead to your illumination. That's the only thing the master cares about. They have compassion for your pain, but only from the sense that they feel compassion that you're as lost as you are. They don't feel sorry for you because they understand that whatever it is you're walking through, you chose for yourself, first of all. You created it for yourself because there was a payoff. And it's exactly what you need to move into the next level of illumination. Why would they feel sorry for you for that? They should be excited about that, I would think. See? And how can that be? How can it be that a master could have compassion and at the same time be almost excited for your suffering? How can that happen? See, the mind can't comprehend that. That can't happen. You can't be compassionate for me and at the same time revel in my suffering. That's not possible. That's schizophrenic. And I will go back to something that that someone I adore very much said at one point, and I just absolutely loved it. And her comment was, you know, that there's a fine line between enlightenment and schizophrenia. That's going to scare people. I probably shouldn't say that, but it is true. Because in the world, you know, I have to tell you, I've been with someone who was very close to me, who was in wretchedly deep pain. Okay. I mean, as low as it gets, just that kind of crying that, you know, if you were there from a place of feeling sorry for the person because of the story, I mean, you would be in pain with them. It's that kind of thing, you know, when someone cries that deeply and it's like it hurts you to even be in their space, right? And I'm sitting there holding this person as these tears are coming, and I'm inside my beingness, I'm laughing. And it even surprised me because it was like, yeah, you know, it was like there's this cheerleader and they're going, yeah. Because what it saw was, oh my God, look at the beauty of the release that's going on here. And it's bringing an opportunity for growth that has been buried for lifetimes. How do you not be excited about that? I had a really hard time not smiling. I have to tell you. And I didn't, because obviously that person would have felt hurt in the moment, because from the place where I sit, they couldn't understand. So why would I do that, right? They couldn't understand. And nor should I expect them to. But that was the experience. Compassion for the person, because I love the person. Well, sure, of course. But simultaneously, the feeling of joy and excitement, you know? Part of that comes because I've walked it. You know, I've walked it. I know what it was like to move from there to there, right? I know what's around the bend because I've been there. And how exciting. Wow. Yeah. So this is the challenge here, right? Especially listening to some crazy spiritual teacher like me. It's a challenge. Because I'm going to challenge everything you believe. Because I think you're wrong? No. I could care less what's wrong or what's right. The fact that you believe it is enough. It's time for you to see the other side. Right? It's time for you to drop the belief in one side and embrace both for what they are. And then to see past that. Where you don't believe any of it. Because to believe it is to be trapped in it. And that's my job. So sometimes that doesn't look very nice. Sometimes it looks cold and cruel. I've had my students swear at me before. Right, Linda? I've had students walk away altogether. And you have to let them go, not chase them, right? It's your choice. You have free will. In your identified state, you have free will. And far be it from me to step on your free will. And if you want to believe the story that you're believing right now about me, then go right ahead. Knock yourself out. You know, swim in it. Revel in it. Love it. Because that's what you've chosen for yourself. So enjoy it. And that's what I would say to anybody about whatever path it is you're walking. If you're walking the path that says, I don't believe any of this spiritual mumbo jumbo, I think you're all crazy. Hey, fantastic. Embrace it. Love it, right? Because that story there doesn't exist in the space of embrace, right? Not at all. But you could take it and move it into the space of embracing it and loving it, and you would transform yourself even just with that. Do you need to do the work I do? No, not at all. Not at all. There are Christed people all over the world who don't do any spiritual practice whatsoever. Who aren't even aware of it. They don't even know it exists. They don't need to, because they are living it. They are it. Yeah. In the Western world, it seems to be very necessary because we are so intellectual. We are so left-brained in the Western world that it's about the only way to get there. You know, in the East, kind of the path of bhakti, that path of devotion, is more popular, and rightly so. They aren't as left-brained. Now that's changing, certainly, because we're westernizing even the East, right? But here, how many people are really willing to give themselves over on the path of devotion, utter devotion? That is a tough walk for a Westerner. Because you have to lose yourself to do it. Lose it. Now, of course, you have to lose yourself to do what I do. But it's in a different capacity, right? Kind of feels different to walk it. If you're going to go the path of devotion, you have to literally give yourself over to it from day one, right? And that's a lot to ask of people in the United States. But here, you know, I can invite people to come to sit at satsang, and we can humor the mind. We can have these talks. We can let them rationalize what I'm saying. I can show them the logic. Tim's one of my people who loves to be shown something that's very logical, right? He likes Vivekananda. Vivekananda's a very logical teacher. He's cool. He is cool. Brilliant work. But that doesn't work for everybody. So, you know, that's why a teacher can be pretty well-versed and know Tim should be reading Vivekananda because it's going to make an impact, but Linda needs Yogananda. Everyone needs Ananda, by the way. There are many of them. Should we change my name? Kumarananda.
I actually thought about that. I was like, maybe we should name her Wait, now I'm going to get all of my shushushus. Shusaraji. Like, let's see if we can do that.
Names. What's in a name, right? Shakespeare. Very enlightened individual, by the way. There are many camps out there that believe that Saint Germain was actually Shakespeare, which is quite interesting. You can play with that, you know. Either way, whatever. All right. So how are we doing on time? We okay?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. What to do in 2 minutes? Gosh, what kind of story could I tell you in 2 minutes? Oh, let me tell you a story. This is great because I haven't told stories on the radio, have I? I haven't.
Not only yours.
Yeah, right. And that's a drag. So let's tell a really cool story. This is one that my Guruji told me, and I love it. And I always give it at some point during satsang. So let me give it to you. There is, and I'm going to let you sit with the meaning. Ooh, maybe we could pick it up next week and talk about the meaning of the story. Okay. So there's a small town in the East, and there is a monk who had taken a vow of silence from the time he was very little, all right, raised as a monk. And this monk lived a very meager life, had a little hut and just a few little belongings. And so he, you know, kind of Mace basically was just in his own hut most of the time. He'd go into town kind of thing, you know, to pick up some food, a few rations. And this was his life, right? Just silence, just the inner contemplation of the divine. And the monk was illumined, right? So one day the monk comes home from town and he walks in the door to find that there is a thief in his hut going through what little he had. And the monk looked at him and the thief turned around and he had this large dagger in his hand. And the monk looked at him and the thief charged the monk with the dagger raised. And just as he's about to plunge it into the monk's heart, the monk looks at him and says this. And I will leave you on this note as we go into meditation. He's about to plunge the knife into his chest. And the monk, who hasn't uttered a word, says this. Thou too art God. I love you. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week. Good night.